The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center, Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the monthly Guest Dharma series.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Becca, and I'm really happy to introduce the talk tonight, being given by Venerable Satyama. She is one of the few Theravadan Buddhist bhikkhunis in the United States. I think there's just a handful. The closest bhikkhuni in the area, I think, is South Carolina, someone was just telling me. So she was ordained in Sri Lanka in 2006. And her talk tonight will be on the Brahma Viharas, the four divine abodes. Loving kindness, compassion, empathetic joy, and equanimity. So, very happy to have you here tonight. Thank you.
I'd like to start with saying the Namo Tassa, okay? So, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddham Dhammam Sangham Vinassa. Good evening, and how are you all today? Okay. What I'm going to do is, first I'm going to give a little talk, then I'm going to tell a story. I love stories. And I'm going to read a poem. So I want to see how many of you will know the author of the poem. And if you don't know, I'll let you tell you who the author is. Okay. So today's talk is going to be on the four Brahma Viharas. Now they are translated into English as divine abodes or sublime states of the mind. So, to again, to refresh your minds, I'm going to state these four again. It's metta, loving kindness, karuna, compassion, mudita, sympathetic joy, and upekkha or equanimity. Now, these are called Brahma Viharas because the Brahmas, the gods in Brahma realms, they abide in these states. They have no anger or enmity in them. There's no ill will. So that is where they abide. That is why it is translated as divine abodes. And when we practice these Brahma Viharas, we elevate ourselves to the state of a Brahma. And we don't have, when we have any of these states within our minds, like metta or karuna or any of these, we don't have any anger, ill will at that moment. So these are very, very important teachings in Buddhism. See, they form the essential, the central part of Buddhism, and they are an essential prerequisite for bhavana, that is mental culture. See, it is very difficult to meditate, as you all know, all of you being meditators, without having goodwill, without having practiced the precepts. It's very difficult to meditate, because the minute you sit for meditate, all these anger, ill will, all these things will come up. So that is why it is very, very important to cultivate the Brahma Viharas. Now, if we take from an ethical point of view, these principles constitute our moral foundation, and they are indispensable to our happiness and peace. So because of that, we should always try to cultivate these states. Now these four states are excellent states of mind. They are lofty and they are boundless. They are immeasurable states, and cultivating these states bring us a lot of peace and happiness. They provide the answers to all our social conflicts. Since now we humans, we are primarily social beings, so for us to live in harmony with each other, it is essential for us to cultivate these Brahma Viharas. Cultivating them is a great benefit to us as individuals and also to the society in which we live, because these states are great removers of stress and tension. They are great peacemakers. They are great healers, and they level all social barriers. Anyone cultivating these states, they don't see people as different. I mean, it doesn't matter from which country they came or which society they are, you just treat all alike. That is why they level all social barriers. And most important, they build harmonious communities. So these states should be cultivated. We should be aware of these states, and we should try to radiate them to all beings that we meet all the time. Actually, it's not such a difficult thing to do, because we think it's difficult, but in reality it is not, because we can start to begin with by simple ways. Always, I mean, smiling is one way of showing everyone that I care about you and I love you. And it takes less facial muscles to smile than to frown. So it's easier. We do less work when we smile. So it's better to smile than to frown. And see, I've been from now for the last 30 odd years, when I sign my name, a part of my signature has become putting this happy face. I mean, I do that. Even I did that even in my income tax return. I should do that. So every time I sign a check or a charge slip, the happy face is there. And invariably, I mean, when you go through the checkout counter, you know how grumpy those are. I mean, they are so tired after, and they are grumpy, and every single one breaks into a smile when they get that check or the charge slip. So at least for a little second even, their tension and their stress level goes down, and they smile. Some will talk to me and say something about the smiling face. Others don't, even though they don't say something, they do break into a smile. So we can all start radiating loving kindness by smiling at everyone we see. And as I said, less facial muscles. Now, we human beings, we know, are very mysterious beings. We have a lot of potentialities within us. We can be a saint or we can be a criminal. Because we all, each and every one of you, including myself, we all have these characteristics within us. And they lie dormant and they rise to the surface at the most inconvenient place. I mean, sometimes you don't know when and where this anger or something will come up. And see, this is why we see the most highly educated people from very high social standings, all for the littlest provocation, they might get into wild outbursts of anger and say and do things that they will regret later. So this is there in all of us. So that is why we have to learn to be mindful. That is where the meditation helps, the mindfulness helps, so that when we see it coming, we can control it and stop it. Now, on the flip side of that, the people that we call, label as criminals, there's so many who have very loving, compassionate beings. And I can vouch that because every month we go to South Dakota, we go to the prison, and we teach them meditation and Buddhism. And so we have a group of about 15 people, inmates that come, and there's two people there. I mean, you think, why are they, these two, in the prison here? Because they are so loving, so compassionate, so gentle, so soft-spoken and lovable people. But must have done something real bad, because one is lifetime. So for them to be lifetime prisoners, they must have done something bad. But isn't it funny how loving and compassionate and gentle they are. And those two took the lifetime eight precepts. And now tomorrow, and Monday, there's two others that are going to take lifetime eight precepts. So they are good people, but at an unguarded moment, the defilements came up, did something that they are regretting the rest of their lives. So we all have this storehouse of virtue and the rubbish heap of vices. Every single one of us, we have this within us. And the way we cultivate and the way we nurture and whatever we bring out, depending on which side we cultivate, we can be a blessing to society or we can be a menace to society, depending on what we cultivate. See, what comes naturally, without any effort, are the vices. And I don't know why. I mean, we don't have to make an effort for the vices to come up. But for us to bring out the virtues, we have to really work hard on it and bring it up. And actually, when you go to see even a baby, will get angry. How did their anger come from? How did that anger come? They do have that anger even as a baby. I mean, it comes naturally. And then we also have, so we start saying, children are naughty by nature. No, they are not naughty by nature. It's just that that is what helps to, they are, that is, no one is helping them to cultivate the good. That is what is happening. Now, we all know that the most powerful and destructive force in, I can say, in the whole wide world is anger. I don't think there's any other force that is more powerful and more destructive than anger. And the one that stops this anger or suppresses anger is metta or loving kindness. Now, stemming from anger, there is another vice that comes up, and that is cruelty. And the opposite virtue that subdues cruelty is compassion, karuna. Now, there is another that stems from anger, another vice that stems from anger, another branch of anger, and that's jealousy. And the opposite of that is mudita or sympathetic joy. Now, there are two other universal characteristics that upset our mental balance. That is attachment to ones we like and aversion to ones we dislike. So these two opposite forces can be eliminated by the development of equanimity, upekkha. So these four virtues are the ones that are called Brahma Viharas, or as they are translated into English, sublime states or divine abodes. And these four virtues are boundless, limitless, and can and should be extended to all beings without exception. See, we all have these to some extent within us, each and every one of us. But our states are limited and conditioned. Now, a mother has all four Brahma Viharas within her only for her child. She has, now her love and compassion for her child is unconditioned. A mother can show unconditional love, compassion, joy, and even equanimity to her child. But her love is limited. It's very difficult to extend it to others. I mean, it can be to friends and family, but to strangers, it's very, very difficult. So, but that is why, actually, you know that the Buddha used to call a mother the Buddha at home, because mothers abide in these four Brahma Viharas where their children are concerned. I guess that must be making all the mothers very happy. Fathers too do have, not that they don't have it. Okay, now we'll take these one at a time and see what they are. Now, the first of the sublime states is called metta. And metta is non-resentment and goodwill. And the Pali word for that is adosa. And that is one of the wholesome roots. Now, we can go into the, I am sure you all know the Metta Sutta. Now the Metta Sutta tells us how to give metta to others, when to give the metta, and to whom we should radiate this metta. So we will go to the Metta Sutta and see how are we going to radiate metta to all beings. So I'll say the, recite the Pali verse first and give the English translation. It says, Mata yata niyam puttam ayusa eka puttaman rakke evam bisabba bhutesu manasam bhavaye aprimana. So that means, just like a mother who would risk her own life for the sake of a one and only child, in the same way, we are supposed to radiate loving kindness to all beings all the time. How many of us can do it? It's difficult, right? We can give it to some, but not to others. See, even though, as I said, even though we all have it, it is limited and conditioned. Now we'll see what the Metta Sutta says, when are we going to radiate loving kindness. Because some of us do radiate it only during the time we meditate. But we'll see what the Buddha says in the Sutta. Tittam charam disinnova sayanova yavatasya vikutamitto etang sading aditteya brahmametang viyarang idavahu. That is, whether standing, walking, sitting, or lying down, or whenever awake. That is when we should develop and cultivate loving kindness to all beings. So these are the four ways that we dispose our body all the time. Is there any other way? No. So that means the whole day, 24/7, to be practicing loving kindness. Actually, if we can make it a habit, I mean, when something happens, we can say all the time, say, may all beings be well and happy. See, that's another thing that I do, is every time I send an email, it doesn't matter who it is, I will always end up by saying, may you be well and happy, and my smiley face is still there. So it's, sometimes I might have to say only one word, but I have to still write that thing. Make use of this opportunity to share the loving kindness and make it a practice. So then it becomes your second nature to you. It becomes your practice. Okay, now we'll see what the Metta Sutta says. Who are we going to radiate this loving kindness? I guess you all know. Ye kechi pana bhutatti tasa vata varava anavasesa diga vaye mahantava majima rasa kanukatula dittava yeva additta yecha dure vasanti avidure bhutava sampave siva sabbe satta bhavantu sukitatta. Whatever living beings that may be, without exception, weak or strong, large or long, medium, short, subtle or gross, visible or invisible, born or yet to be born, may all beings be well and happy. So Is there anyone left out in that? No. So we have to radiate metta to all. For it to be an immeasurable, sublime state, metta has to be radiated to all beings without exception. So when, as I said before, when we have metta, even for a short time, in our minds, at that time, ill will and anger is suppressed. So if you, when you are getting angry over something, if somebody is making you angry, if you are mindful, you see the anger coming out. All you have to do is just say, may the person be well, happy. You can see the anger going down. Now, even though we were talking of love and metta, but we have to remember that sexual love is not metta. The love that you have, unless you can have a unconditioned love to your partner, the sexual love that you have or the sensual love that you have to your partner is not metta. Because sexual love and sensual love brings sorrow, happiness, and a lot of suffering. Metta brings happiness and peace. So, if people were giving unconditioned, if people had unconditional love towards their partners, there wouldn't be any divorce in this world. People will be all living together very happily. If they can only, that's the only way you can live with someone, is if you can give them unconditional love and accept them for who they are and what they are, and not try to treat them only if they, some people, okay, because it's conditioned. I love you only if you love me in return. So that is where the conflict starts. Now we'll see the second one. Compassion. Now, how do we have to give karuna, compassion? It is like the parents on seeing the suffering of their dear only child is all out to remove the suffering. In this way, compassion should be cultivated towards all beings that are suffering. I'm sure a parent, especially a mother, will go do anything. If the mother can take that suffering to her own self, she will do it. She will go to any extent to alleviate the suffering of the child. So mother can do that for a child, but can a mother do that for a stranger? No. So this is how we have to cultivate karuna to all beings. And when we cultivate compassion, it has to be, we have to do it without expecting anything in return, not even gratitude. See, some people, this actually compassion comes very naturally to almost everyone. People do a lot. If you look at the world around us, look at all the good things, look at all the compassionate things people do. People go help so many people. Churches help a lot, organizations help a lot. There's so much of things going on in the world. Compassion is there, but still, they want something in recognition. Either their name must be put up big, so that we did this, so and so, this company did this, this church went to all these places, and so they have these big plaques put up to show what they did. It's very, very rare that someone will do something, but there are people who will do a lot good and be anonymous and no one will even know. That is how you should be compassionate. That is how you should show compassion. we do it and be anonymous. You don't need the recognition. So, for compassion to be a sublime state of mind, it has to reach beyond the limited and extended to all beings without exception. Now, the third one is mudita or sympathetic joy. Now again, it says, as parents who on seeing the happiness of their dear and only child are glad and joyful, in this way, we should develop sympathetic joy towards all beings. Now, karuna is very easy for everyone, but mudita is a little bit difficult because we, as human beings, we all have that element of jealousy within us. We want to be the number one. We want to be this. We want to be that. And it's very difficult to see someone else doing, having all the things, nice things, and I have nothing to, nothing is very difficult. So we cannot be happy at their success because of that. See, if you say you go for a job interview, you didn't get the job, but the other person got the job that is there. Can you be happy for that person? No. You say, why did I get it? How come he got that job? See, that element of that jealousy is there in us. But we really try to, if we are really practicing this, we can come to a stage. That is why Buddhas and Arahats are the human beings in this world who have these with for all beings alike. And all Brahmas in the Brahma world as this. This came out. Huh? It's okay? I don't know how it came out. Now, the fourth one is upeka, equanimity. Now, this is the most difficult one, and it is the most essential one to cultivate. So, cultivating upeka means that we have to treat everyone alike. That is, without any attachment or without any aversion. So to be able to treat the saint and the sinner alike is the most difficult thing for all beings. Now, upeka is not indifferent. It is not the cussedness of saying, oh, I don't care. It's not an I don't care attitude. It is, I do care, because upeka constitutes all the others. There's metta, there's compassion, karuna, and mudita in upeka. All three are there. So it's not you know and understand and you are treating everyone alike. It's not I don't care attitude. So we need to learn to treat everyone without any discrimination, without a like or a dislike. It doesn't matter who that person is. It doesn't matter whether that person is from Sri Lanka, Japan, Thailand. It doesn't matter. They're all human beings. It doesn't matter whether your color is white, black, blue, red, yellow. It doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter whether your religion is Christianity, Muslim, Jewish, Buddhism, it doesn't matter. We have to treat all alike. And then, so that is the difficult thing. And with practice, we all can do it. So upekkha is to bring the mind to this still point. It doesn't waver, it's balanced, well balanced. It doesn't go anywhere. It's just perfect, still balanced. So, the four sublime states are interrelated, interdependent, but it is equanimity, as I said, that guards love, compassion, and sympathetic joy. Equanimity is the most essential quality, deep and difficult to cultivate. One needs much patience, energy, and determination to cultivate these qualities without being selfish or partial. So upekkha puts aside both attachment and resentment. Now, we'll round up everything together and see. Metta includes all living beings from the minute microbe to the mighty noble being. Karuna includes all beings that are suffering, sick and needy. Mudita includes all beings that are prosperous, successful and happy. And upekkha includes all, the good, the bad, the loved, the unloved, the pleasant, the unpleasant, the saint, and the criminal. The friend and the foe too. In other words, it is to treat everyone alike without exceptions. So when we practice these states, we become very joyful. Being joyful, our minds become unified. And we dwell, suffusing one direction with our hearts filled with loving kindness. We dwell, suffusing the whole world everywhere and equally with our hearts filled with loving kindness. Abundant, immeasurable, without enmity, without ill will. And we dwell with our hearts full of compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity, without ill will. Now, equanimity is the crown and the culmination of all the four sublime states. Now that doesn't mean that the equanimity is superior and the others are inferior. No, it's not like that. They are all equally the same. And equanimity includes and pervades them fully, just as they fully and pervade perfect equanimity. Now I'm going to tell you a story. I said about how a mother has all four states of Brahma Vihara to the child. Now this story that I'm going to say is supposed to be a true story, but I don't know. It is something that I heard, so I don't know who said it, where, or anything about it. But it's a nice story. So listen to it as a story and we can learn from that. Okay, so there was this mother and this little boy, child. And the mother loved this child and they were the only two. But this mother had only one eye. And the child developed resentment towards the mother because the mother had one eye. And as the child was a little big and going to school, the child did not want the mother anywhere near the school. He did not want any of his friends to see his mother. He did not want anyone to, so he did not want any of his friends to come home, nor did he want in the mother to come anywhere near where his friends are, to anywhere near the school. So no one knew his mother. So as he grew up, and when he finished, so he was an intelligent, good child. So he studied well, and when he finished his studies, because he wanted to, so the mother keeps telling him to get married and start a family, but he would never wanted to do that. He would never want a wife to see his mother. So what he did was, he left the mother, and he went to a faraway city. And there he got a good job. He had got married, had a big house, everything, and had two children. And he was living very happily there. Now no one knew the wife or anyone. So now in this village, no one knew anything about his mother. So after a while, now the mother wanted to see, of course he writes once in a way. So mother had her address. Now she wanted to see how the son is keeping. See the love, the compassion, the joy arises in her. So she wants to see whether the son is doing well. Now she doesn't know whether the son is doing well or not. So she decided she wanted to see the son so badly that she decided without letting him know, she decided to go in search of her. She didn't tell anyone that's living in the village either, because she didn't want anyone to know that the son has abandoned her and gone either. So now she takes this address and she travels by herself searching for the son. So after days of traveling, eventually she first finds the city, and then going up and down she finds the street, and now she found the house. And now she was so happy when she saw the house. At least it's a big house, so she thought, okay, now she's happy, my son is doing well. And now she rings the doorbell. And two little girls come running and open the door. And when they see her, again, the one eye, the two kids got scared, screamed and ran back. So now the parents come to see what happened to the children, why are they screaming and crying. So when they came, now the son pretended that he did not recognize the mother. And he shouted and said, "Who are you? What are you doing here to come and make these children frightened? You have no right to be here," and chased her out. Now did the mother get sad? Did she tell who she was? No. She was only happy that the son, she was happy to see the son doing well. She was happy to see the wife. She was happy to see her two grandchildren. She was filled with joy and equanimity. So she turned back and she went home. Didn't say who she was or what she was. And now after a while, so she was staying there for a while, and so now she's old, she got sick, and now she was about to die. So before she died, she wrote a letter to her son, but didn't mail it. She gave it to the person who lives with whoever is living with her. And And of course, the people at that time, before she died, she wanted them to let the son know. So they informed the son, but by the time the son came, she was dead. The funeral was all over. So when the son came, they gave the letter. Now, he read the letter, and the letter says why she had this one eye. When the child was, I'm getting goosebumps. When the child was little, this son of hers was a little, he injured his eye. And the mother gave that her eye to the child so that the child can live a normal life. And she was with one eye because of the fact that she gave her own eye to the child. Now it was too late. Of course, the child must have repented, and it was too late. So that is how a mother's love, her compassion, her joy, and her equanimity to her son. So that is, I cried when I read, when I heard that story, and even now when I get goosebumps. See? Okay, now for the poem. Okay, this was written by a poet who loved his mother very dearly and thought about his love to the mother. When your mother has grown older and you have grown older, when what was formerly easy and effortless becomes a burden, when her dear loyal eyes do not look into life as before, when her legs have grown tired and do not want to carry her anymore, then give your arm for support. Accompany her with gladness and joy. The hour will come weeping when you accompany her on her last journey. And if she asks you, always answer her. If she asks again, speak also. And if she asks another time, speak to her not sternly, but gently, gently. And if she cannot understand, you will explain everything joyfully, because the hour will come, the bitter hour, when her mouth will ask no more. Anyone knows who the poet is? Anyone here knows? No? You don't know. Okay. Now, I will tell the name of the poem if you promise me that you won't shout at me or throw me out of this place. As I told you before, even the worst man on earth will have a corner of his heart where there is love. You can, even with that hint, can you guess? Huh? Hitler. It was written by Hitler. You didn't hear? Read it again. It's beautiful. When your mother has grown older, and you have grown older, when what was formerly easy and effortless becomes a burden, when her dear loyal eyes do not look out into life as before, when her legs have grown tired and do not want to carry her anymore, then give your arm for support. Accompany her with gladness and joy. The hour will come weeping when you accompany her on her last journey. And if she asks you, always answer her. And if she asks again, speak also. And if she asks another time, speak to her not sternly, but in gentle peace. And if she cannot understand, you will explain everything joyfully, because the hour will come, the bitter hour, when her mouth will ask no more. Isn't that beautiful though? Can't imagine a man like Hitler wrote this poem. I mean, that is what I'm saying. Since I read this poem, my attitude towards Hitler changed completely. I was able to forgive him, and I was able to give him, cultivate compassion towards him. I think he needs more compassion than anyone else for all what he has done. At least someday his love for his mother will be what will help him someday to come out of the hell realms. Who knows? So, that is all I have to tell you about the four Brahma Viharas. If we have any questions, yes.
I work above a homeless shelter. The men's shelter.
Okay.
Where I work upstairs at the job council right now. One of the men in the shelter stopped me to the point where I had to go to court to get a restraining order. And he made me very afraid. I thought I had forgiven him and let him go, but I realized that I stopped practicing equanimity towards the men in the shelter. I don't see them as the same. I see them, I'm afraid of them. And this is blocking me from being able to have the level of compassion that I did before, and to not have an aversion because of my fear. How do I overcome it?
Yeah. For one thing, just because of something one man did, you've got everyone into it, which is wrong. It's like when one ant bites you, you kill the whole ant, all the ants. No, that's not wrong. That's wrong, for one thing. See, they have, even this man, if you look at deep into him, he might have some good in him. See, as I told you, we all have this. And we all have the good, we all have the bad. And there's nothing that he did, I mean, if you look back, that you would not have done. So when you look at it in that way, for one thing, you shouldn't include all because of one person. And to the person who did, you can find ways and means. Go on every night when you meditate. Say his name and say, may he be well and happy. May he be free from anger, whatever, aversion, all these things. But be nice to the others. It's up to you to be nice to everyone. You have to cultivate it. No one can do it for you.
The mother giving that letter to her son.
Yes.
Her son would accept it or receive it with just feelings of guilt and shame. And one might even think, I don't want to say this, but they might think that she gave him the letter so that she
got to
get even with him finally.
Oh, I really don't think she did it with the intention of getting even with the son. Because I think she just wanted him to know why she had this one eye. And then she didn't let him know as long as she was alive. She didn't. And even when she chased, I mean, I'm sure they each knew. He knew that this was the mother, and the mother knew that the son recognized it. But even when he chased, she didn't get angry. She didn't say who she was. She went home. But I think deep down, who knows, when she was dying, before she died, she must have thought, at least for him to know. That way he can make repentance, and he can, for all the things that he did. See, he was not a, I mean, he had this animosity towards her from the time he was little. He didn't like the fact that she had one eye. See, he cast him completely from the friends, everything. Even though he associated with her, he didn't want anyone to see. He was shy of him, he was of her, and all that. So I'm sure she wanted him to at least know, and then for him to at least have a better way of dealing with it later on. That is how I saw that. That she not to get even. It's very rarely that a mother will try to get even with a child. No, even no, I don't think a mother will ever try to get even with a child. Unless, of course, I mean, there are exceptions to every rule. I mean, there are mothers who throw the children away, there are mothers who do, but what I'm saying is, in general, a mother is, I mean, even in animals, a mother protects the children. So, yeah.
We learn verses for each of the Brahma Viharas.
Yeah.
And I guess I have two questions. Uh-huh. One, what do you think of the verses? And I'm curious, what are the verses you might use?
I can't remember the verses from the top of my head. It is again dwelling in something similar to one quarter of the. That is what it is, to dwell in one quarter with.
May I abide.
One quarter, heart equanimity, and all these. That is how. Yes. That is what I read a part of it. That is what you. Yes. Well, that is how you cultivate it.
Because, like Sharon Salzberg.
Yes.
Does the, you know, her famous,
yes,
verses.
Uh huh.
And so that's what a lot of people learn. Uh huh. Variations on those.
Yeah. No. This is what is in the sutras is one quarter of the mind dwelling in loving kindness and abiding and suffusing it to all beings around, above, below, and yeah.
We had that in our chat books.
Yeah.
I was just curious.
I use the simple. I do all the time. I mean, it's like even if I'm doing nothing, I will just say, may all beings be well, happy and peaceful. And most of the time, if someone does something, I mean, when someone, even when they bow to me, I will say, may you be blessed with good health, long life, peace and happiness. So I just go on practicing the easy way. Then it's easy. Then it's there all the time without memorizing the whole thing. Every time, may all beings be. Now even as I came before I started, I radiated loving kindness to everyone here. May all of us sitting here tonight, may we all be well, happy and peaceful. So. Yeah.
Thank you for your teachings tonight. My questions are about you.
If that's something interesting.
May I ask you some questions?
Sure, you can.
All right. I have a lot. that, so I'll just say, why are you in Minnesota? I don't understand why you came to the U.S. You know, I mean, you are from here, and I'm just so thrilled you're here. I just don't know how that happened.
Well, I came here as a Montessori teacher. And, yeah. So that is how I am here.
How long have you been here?
About 36. 36 years. Yeah.
So you know our winters pretty well.
Sure. It's like, I think I'm almost at the half point where I have spent half my life in Sri Lanka and half life here. It's exactly at the half point.
How long have you been?
I became a Theravada bhikkhuni, as she said, in 2006. But I was a Zen priest before. Yeah, in 2000 is when I became a Zen priest. I was at Clouds in Water Zen Center, and I became a, yeah.
I could ask lots more questions. I'll ask one.
Okay.
Have you been practicing some type of Buddhism your whole life? Were you raised with it?
No.
No?
No, I didn't. See, what happens is, in most Buddhist countries, you are born a Buddhist, and then you don't practice too much till later. I went to Catholic schools, and I didn't practice. I think I really started practicing only as an adult, and so only after I came to this country I really did most of my practice. We used to go to the temple once in a way, not always. And the funniest part is, I don't know how I live. I never, when we were back, never liked the monks too much.
Yeah. How does that change?
I have one myself, so sure it's changed. So one day I was telling the monks, they asked, so when they asked me whether I knew this priest and that priest in Sri Lanka, I said, I really don't know any of the priests in Sri Lanka. And I said, I never liked monks in Sri Lanka, I said. And so, well, I always say, actually I brought this from my last birth. Otherwise, nothing in this birth was really conducive to my becoming a bhikkhuni. I don't know. Nothing, because I went to Catholic schools, never practiced, didn't study much. And then, actually my formal meditation was with Dosho at Clouds in Water. And then I started, then I didn't take to Zen either. Because by birth I was a Theravada. And my children didn't let me become a Theravada bhikkhuni to begin with. So after they got used to me as a Zen priest, I went to Sri Lanka, and without telling them, I became a novice there. And after I became a novice, I called and said I changed the color of my robe. then it was too late. And then, so now, I mean, and then of course, yeah. I don't have, there's no monastic community for me to live, because I can't live with the monks. So so I live in a kuti. My kuti is above my son's garage. So it's convenient kuti.
As a
I don't handle money.
Money. So how do you have, you must have help.
So whatever I need, my son is there. He'll do whatever So my living is, I have no expense. And then the community gives me the food. And if that doesn't happen, then there's always the food is there from the house. Huh? That's right. You are right. Oh, but I would any day, I always say, if anyone needs an eye or if anyone needs a kidney, I will definitely share with whoever needs. But, actually, most of them do it as a regular practice. Some people, when they sit without doing the breath meditation, they do the loving kindness meditation. And with the loving kindness meditation too, you can get into absorptions. You get into the first three absorptions with the loving kindness. With the fourth, with the equanimity, you get into the fourth absorption. Yeah. So they are very powerful meditations. But get into the habit every day, as soon as you get up in the morning, the first thing is, say, may all beings be well and happy. I mean, it's as simple as that. And before you go to bed, when you go to bed, after you get yourself all comfy, and before you close your eyes, say, may all beings be well, happy and peaceful. And whenever anger arises, just say, may all beings be well, happy and peaceful. If it's towards a particular person, just say, may that person be well, happy and peaceful. And you can feel it going down. Yeah.
Does orange mean something?
No. See, it's earth tones. The robes you mean. So each one, there's different people have different, it's different all because of the, at that time they used the natural dyes. So because of the natural dyes, it became a little, colors became different. And then also different groups have a different color. Now forest monks, Thai forest monks have one color. Thai city monks have another color. Then even in Sri Lanka, the forest monks have a darker color and the city monks have a... And also, it depends on the place where you get ordained. See, the place where I got ordained, this is the color that we had to wear. So we had to have this color for our ordination ceremony. So then the priests in the temple also wear the same color. So I thought I might as well stick to the same color.
City monk?
Huh?
City monk or?
When I say see the forest monks, they do only meditation. They don't do much community things. City monks do most of the, they live in the city, they don't live in a forest. And they are the ones who do a lot of interaction with the community, help the community, and build up the community, do all these people when they come for their funeral services, birth services, everything is what they do. No, I'm not a city monk anyway. I'm a hermit nun. That's the forest, so yeah, I like it.
But you go to the prison.
Yes, very little. My going out is very, very little. See, even to the temple, I go only on Sundays because I do the teaching on Sundays. After that, I don't see. I'm inside the house. I don't even see the people downstairs. My kuti is above the garage. So I have hardly very little contact with the people who live in the house. So I don't even know whether they are at home or not. Only thing is when I need a, I make sure that when I have to go to the temple, I ask them whether they are home or not, whether I can get a ride. So if they are not there, then I have to call the priest and he'll have to arrange a ride for me to go to the temple. So my going to the out is very, very limited. I mean, for days I don't talk to anyone. Just be within the four walls. And it was recently, very recently, someone was, actually my daughter-in-law was driving me and said something about the Metrodome. I asked, what about it? Oh, didn't you know? I said, what? No. Oh, the roof collapsed. I said, I don't watch TV, I don't listen to news, I don't read a newspaper, so I don't know the news either. And that's good, I'm happy.
So it's unusual for you to come speak to a group like you are tonight. Is that what I'm hearing?
I go very rarely, but I enjoy it because I go to wherever I can help with people who are in. I wouldn't go for a party, but I would go for something like that. Now, even in the temple, they'll have social get-togethers. When there's a social get-together, I don't go. See, they do a lot of community building, so to get the people together and for the children to come, they have social events. Then I don't go to the temple. Because I think now I like going and giving a talk, that I do, because that is Dhamma. And sharing Dhamma and discussing Dhamma I like. Other than that, now even when I go to the prison, it's to teach meditation. So one I do, we have, so there's three groups that we do too. One's the lay people, they have, now tomorrow evening is with the lay people. I do meditation with them. And then on Monday there's two sessions of meditation with the inmates. So I think they are getting good. So actually I told them when they were, I said, think yourself as lucky to be here. I said, you don't have to worry about anything. You have your food, everything. Just spend your time meditating. Yeah, that's a good thing. Okay, you did something wrong, so instead of having remorse and anger about it, think, oh, this is fun, this is good, I can meditate. So now, tomorrow, on Monday when we go, there's two others that's going to get a lifetime 8 precepts. But they can't become monks though. While they cannot become a monk while they are in the prison, you know. Yes?
What's the temple you practice out of? Where is the temple? Is there a temple that you belong to?
The Minnesota Buddhist Vihara. It's North Minneapolis. Yeah.
Maybe time for one more question and then we'll have our reception.
Yeah. Okay.
I have one more question.
Okay.
You said that you would give your eye or your kidney for anyone.
Yes.
You would even give it for someone that you knew wanted to harm you?
It doesn't matter. What? It doesn't matter though. Yeah, I would. You know that there was a monk in Sri Lankan monk. He donated his kidney. And in Sri Lanka, there is this thing about there's groups of Christianity groups come, and they try to convert the villagers into Christianity. So when he decided to donate his kidney, someone came and told him, now it's all that, do you know who you are donating your kidney to? He said, it doesn't matter who, I don't care. He said, this is the person who's trying to come to our country and convert all the Buddhists into... He said, that's her problem, not my problem. He still gave the kidney. So that's their problem. If they, or someone wants to hurt me, it's their problem, not my problem. Yeah. Okay. What do you normally do? Actually, what we normally do is we dedicate the merit to the, we share the merits with the devas, if that is okay with you. That's what we normally do. We because we started with the Namotasa and then we dedicate all the merits to the devas. Okay. So, Akasatta Jabumata, Devanaga Mahitika, Punyantangana Moditva, Chiran Rakkanta Sasanang, Akasatta Jabumata, Devanaga Mahitika, Punyantangana Moditva, Chiran Rakkanta Desanang, Akasatta Jabumata, Devanaga Mahitika, Punyantangana Moditva, Chiran Rakkanta Mampara. May all deities share this merit, and may they all be well, happy and peaceful. And may all of you share this merit, and may you all be blessed with good health, long life, peace and happiness. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Buddham, dhammam, sangham, namassami, sadhu.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.